The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $359 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to Ice Time, the Buffalo News Hockey Podcast. I'm Lance Lysowski, the Sabres beat writer for the Buffalo News, and joined as always by Mike Harrington, our columnist. It's a break, Mike, a break from the NHL regular season, 13 days between games for the Sabres, but there is still plenty to talk about. And let's start right off the top. That hockey game on Wednesday night in Montreal was, we didn't know what to expect, right? I think there was a lot of talk. Is the Four Nations face-off going to be a glorified all-star game? How serious are these guys going to take it? Well, we saw right away how seriously they were all going to take it, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And that was the word. That it was going to be serious. Rasmus Dahlin told both of us it was going to be serious. I talked to him when we were on the West Coast. You talked to him recently. You know, all it takes is seeing that other jersey, but they knew it was going to be serious. We saw the way Dahlin took McDavid out. We saw the way these guys played in general. I mean, Shea Theodore got hurt on a check into the wall. So this was far from an all-star game. That overtime was just sensational. It was reminiscent of Sweden and Team North America in the 2016 World Cup, won on a goal by Nathan MacKinnon. And the thing that jumped out at me is how the overtime went became an advertisement for this being a little bit of a lab for the NHL. Maybe they should be going to 10-minute overtimes to cut down on the number of shootouts. Nathan MacKinnon said immediately, wait a second. I'm really gassed after this one. The top players are really going to struggle in that. And Connor McDavid said, apparently, absolutely, we should think about it. If you went to 10-minute overtime, I think you would have to go deeper down the bench. But I think the idea of cutting down shootouts, at least go 7 minutes and see. But that was a terrific game. And the one thing about it to me, Lance, was it was a little easy at the start for Team Canada. And I think they thought it was blowout city. The Swedes didn't look really together. They looked a little slow. And all of a sudden, Sweden found their game a little, and it wasn't so easy. It was almost like I was texting with a couple people. It was Team Canada-Russia, 1972, game one. And that was also in Montreal at the old Forum. It was a quick 2-0 lead for Canada, and everybody thought it was going to be party time. And the Russians came back and won 7-3 and really set the tone for the first half of that series. That didn't happen last night, but I think it showed how together the Swedish team can be. And now we're going to see, as this tournament goes on here, where the U.S. stands. I think Finland is a distant fourth. I don't expect them to do a whole lot here. But a great opening night, and big announcements about international play are going to go on here every couple of years, Gary Bettman said prior to that game. So we're going to be seeing more World Cups. We're going to be seeing Olympics, and this is what the players want. They've wanted best on best for a decade, and they finally have it.
It took Sweden, a little over 16 minutes to get their first shot on goal. They just had the puck in the offensive zone for the first 15 minutes of the game, and it was video game type of passes. It was absurd. Like the power play goal for Nathan MacKinnon, the pass by Sidney Crosby, it looked like they were just going to run over them 10-1. No, I it's exactly
the PlayStation power play. I mean, it was unbelievable. The back pass, it was unbelievable, that first power play goal.
And it's funny because in hindsight, you go back and you listen to some of the coverage from folks in Canada, national reporters who were talking about, Canada, they didn't look all that sharp in practice the first couple of days. Yeah, they're going to be okay. To Sweden's credit, you mentioned it. I mean, their decor is arguably the most well-rounded in the tournament when you have Victor Hedman. You know, you got Gustav Forsling on your second pair, Ekholm, Carlson, Rasmus Dahlin, Jonas Brodin. So they adjusted very quickly, and they, you know, as much as Canada had the puck for that long, they weren't getting shots on goal. Sweden was keeping them to the outside, and a big part of that was their decor. Credit to their coach for adjusting. And it was very interesting, Mike, to see that Rasmus Dahlin, we didn't expect him to run either power play. You're not going to when you're a teammate of Victor Hedman and Erik Karlsson, two future Hall of Famers, one has multiple Stanley Cup rings. But it did take a lot of people aback to not see Dahlin in overtime whatsoever.
Yeah, you know, but basically I looked at the shift charts here. Hedman played 229 in overtime, and Forsling played 220. All right, Dahlin and Brodin did not play in overtime. Matthias Ekholm played 51 seconds. Erik Karlsson played 26 seconds.
Yep.
Two shifts of 13 seconds each, one of which ended up in the Marner goal where he backed all the way into his goaltender just about. But it really started in the third period where the Swedish team decided they were going to ride Hedman and Forsling. Hedman played 9:05 in the third period. Forsling played 8:25. Dahlin's number 6:47 in the first, 5:41 in the second, 4:47 in the third. Sweden decided where they were going to go with their defense, cutting down the rotation. Remember, in overtime, it's 3-on-3. You're only running one defenseman out there at a time anyway. But they really rode Hedman and Forsling. And, you know, I'm not as big on Hedman now. He's getting older. He's slowing down. He's 33 years old. And the thing is, there's a lot of mileage on a lot of these Tampa players because they went to three straight cup finals and another Eastern Conference final in that 7-year run. So there's a lot of mileage on these guys. And, Victor Hedman kind of showed it, I thought, a little last night. But that was the decision they made. And you know what? Yeah, it's probably a surprise. But the other thing is, this is a best-on-best tournament. And I see Ekholm, Stanley Cup final at Nashville. I see Hedman, Stanley Cups. I see Erik Karlsson, deep run, Stanley Cup final. I see Gustav Forsling, Stanley Cup with the Florida Panthers. Jonas Brodin, a lot of playoff experience with Minnesota Wild, and Rasmus Dahlin. And I think the Buffalo Sabres conspired against Rasmus Dahlin's ice time last night. He simply hasn't played in any real spots since he became an NHLer, and that works against him.
Same reason why Tage Thompson isn't in this tournament. Bill Guerin shows playoff experience and guys who've just been there and played specific roles. It works against you, but that is a perfect segue to our second topic.
Don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
What this whole tournament experience means for Rasmus Dahlin. Now, last night aside, that the minutes, his ice time is going to be probably similar to that the rest of the tournament, around 17 to 20 minutes, which is fine. He still has a prominent role. I still thought that he played really well in regulation. It wasn't perfect by any means, but just considering this guy's played through multiple injuries all season. I think people forget that fact, and he still leads all NHL defensemen in primary assists per 60 minutes. He is still having a very good season despite playing through multiple injuries. And if you're the Sabres, yes, you want him to get through this healthy. You want him to not have any other injuries or nothing get aggravated, but you also want him to experience meaningful games. These are, aside from the final couple weeks of the 22-23 season, like, these are the most meaningful games Dahlin has played during an NHL regular season, are they not?
Yeah, and the thing is, too, is this is clearly a precursor to the Olympics, and I would certainly expect Dahlin to be on the Swedish Olympic team next year in Italy. So they need to get everybody together and start really forming their Olympic team. Now, that's what this tournament is. It's a return to best on best for the players because they wanted it, and it's for the nations to really start to build their Olympic team for next February in terms of most of the guys on their roster. There'll be some changes, but they want to see guys at this level. They want to see pairings and whatever. But what can Dahlin bring back from it? Anytime you can get a guy like Dahlin in a winning experience, in an experience where he's in the locker room with Victor Hedman, with Erik Karlsson, with a guy who's more recently come upon success like Gustav Forsling, some of that has to rub off. Your countrymen will rub off on you. And the Sabres still lack a lot of winning experience. You have the Stanley Cup of Bo Byram. You have the trips to the final from Connor Clifton, from Alex Tuck. But they just don't have that kind of experience, especially from their own core players. And getting Dahlin on this team and getting him out there 17, 18 minutes a night, it has to help him. It's going to be a great experience for him no matter what happens in the standings for Sweden.
This is going to assist in his growth as a captain. Because absolutely, when you're in your own bubble, like he has been the last few months with the Sabres, and we've spoken about all the tumult and all the different crises that they've had over the last 4 months, you're talking to the same people every day. But to get plopped into that situation in Montreal for this tournament and to be around the players that you mentioned, Peter Forsberg is even walking the halls of Bell Center, right? And that's one of Dahlin's heroes. And to have conversations with people like that and to gain insight and to remind yourself that, you are one of the best players, from your country and the world. It does a mountain for you in terms of confidence. And we'll see if, you know, I'm not convinced that Dahlin's not going to be running a power play at the Olympics next year. We'll see how Hedman does. We didn't really see Sweden got one power play last night.
I think it was one power play, yeah.
Yeah, and Erik Karlsson's, he's still really good at it. But, you know, this is an opportunity for the coach of Sweden to really evaluate and get a read on what guys can do. And for Dahlin, it's getting back and just having fun playing again, because it's been a pressure cooker, you know, for him in that role. He's only 24 years old, being a captain of a team that's gone through so many terrible situations in a span of 4 months.
Now, you said tumult. You said 4 months of tumult. Okay. Really? It feels like this season has been about 4 years of tumult wrapped into 50-plus games, as incredible as it is. And Dahlin has been the captain and has been standing out in front of people, having to deal with a lot of these situations in front of the media and in the locker room behind the closed doors. So, yeah, I think Dahlin has learned a couple of years worth of crises in these 4 months, and I think that's one thing the Sabres just need to try to calm things down these last 25 games.
And I think this normal. I think this tournament's going to be a reminder to fans about how good he is.
Yeah.
He catches a lot of heat from the fan base because of the team struggles, the power play being as bad as it is. He's not
because of the money.
It's not playing like Quinn Hughes, right? It's not being in the Norris Trophy conversation, and people are tired of waiting. It's very similar, Mike, in my opinion, to the discourse around Eichel and Reinhart in their last few years, where fans were so fed up they didn't even know who to point the finger at that point. And they kind of lost sight of, you know, who the problem is and who is it. I'll tell you, you look at Dahlin's game. You could look at it statistically. You could look at it analytically. He's still having a really good season, especially when you consider the team that he's on, how their struggles in different areas of the ice, particularly defensively, and the injuries that he's played through. Like, this guy, he's gutted it out. I mean, I asked Lindy Ruff about it in Nashville, about, you know, what he's thought of Dahlin playing through pain and playing. And he said, like, you know, we've given him the option. You know, do you want to sit out? And he refuses. And he's playing through it. And we haven't seen the best Rasmus Dahlin yet.
Did he say in December during the losing streak? I'm not sitting out anymore. They sat him out the one back-to-back when he first came back. But he knows the season went away with that losing streak because he was out for 9 of those 13 losses. You know, and he's committed some goofy turnovers and had some issues in the defensive zone. But part of me says you're going to commit some goofy turnovers when you're playing 25, 26 minutes a night and have the puck as much as he does. Now, especially, I'd like to see some of the turnovers cut down on the power play. He's created some shorthanded opportunities here for the opponents a little too often for my liking. But you're right. I think for a guy who's out there as much as he is, this tournament can really help him, and you just want to see his consistency level continue to rise here, especially, again, as I say, at that salary, the expectation is he should be in the neighborhood of Quinn Hughes and those kind of guys, and right now he's not.
Even the best defensemen in the league make mistakes. It happens, right? With turnovers, when you're on, you mentioned it, when you're on the ice that often, you know, Chris Letang was a punching bag in Pittsburgh for years because he makes similar blunders, you know, and you got to live with the mistakes, and it's all about how you respond to them. And, you know, it's just a fact that Dahlin's, he's grown immensely when it comes to the defensive side of his game. He's become a much more complete player, but the power play, you need him to make more of an impact in 3-on-3 because he's so good. And it's just all about having poise in those situations and really kind of, you know, yeah, you're going to be pressured. It's on you to lead your team, but, you know, it's
They were going to throw him out there.
I did
too. Overtime went 6.5 minutes. I'm thinking they got to throw Dahlin out there for 40 seconds here. One of these shifts, they're just going to run Hedman and Forsling ragged here. I think if it had gone to minutes 7, 8, 9, we would have saw Dahlin at least one of those shifts. And that would have been pretty interesting, as he would have been pretty fresh by that point in the game.
Hedman and Gustav Forsling both got stuck on the ice at different times where it was impossible to make a change. And it happened. So Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's going to, as of right now, he's the backup for Finland. I'd be surprised, Mike, if he gets a game. We'll see about Saros, though. I mean, UC Saros has struggled for the Nashville Predators this season.
Right.
If he has a rough game, do they turn to Luukkonen? I mean, we'll see. They play Sweden on Saturday afternoon, right?
All these teams have to. I like when Matthew Tkachuk said it's the equivalent of playing 4 game 7s. If you have a bad night in goal, you're going to make a switch. Certainly, if Canada had lost last night, Binnington wasn't overly impressive. Gustafsson was the far better goalie in that game. Canada would have certainly made a switch for game two. So we'll see if Luukkonen gets a shot here. I don't expect much from the Finns, and if they take it on the chin here, I would imagine Luukkonen might see a game.
This is good for Henry Jokiharju and, by extension, the Sabres. Jokiharju is going to probably play much more than you would have expected because of all the injuries on Finland's blue line. He's a pending unrestricted free agent, a right-shot defenseman. Someone's going to want him before the deadline. We'll see what the return is, but if he has a good tournament, suddenly he's a little bit more movable. We don't know if Kevin Adams is going to deplete his depth a little bit by making a trade involving Jokiharju, but it's at least, you know, see how he plays, see if he, you know, he's only playing around 10 minutes a night the last couple of weeks for the Sabres, and he's going to have to be a lot more clean because they're going to be putting him out there in situations he may not have been accustomed to in a while. Next topic, Mike. We have a Sabres roundtable. They were running in the Sunday paper. It's always fun. Readers love them. You and I, we answer usually a handful of topics. This time it's four around. Just addressing the state of the team. You know, this time it's more of a pre-trade deadline edition. So I think it's a great time for us to discuss one of those four topics. And Dylan Cousins. He's been attached to trade rumors for, 8 weeks now almost, because
I hope he's off social media for as much as his name appears.
Yeah, and he told me in Ottawa he deleted it off his phone at the start of the season. He learned his lesson last season. Good. And because so many teams have called Kevin Emmons about him, Cousins' name is in the media once a week. Every team is calling because he's a right shot center who's only 23 years old. He's 2 years removed from scoring 31 goals. The contract, $7 million a year. Yeah, it's rough right now because he's not producing, but if you get him back on track, that's a discount for a right-shot center who could score 30 goals. So,
with 5 years left in the deal, so teams have their certainty that they know what they're going to be paying going out forward.
And the intangibles are there. He was a lot of people like Dylan Cousins around the NHL, right? A career high in hits already. His face-off percentage is above 50% for the first time in his career. So there's progress in certain areas, but he's not scoring yet. You're still waiting for that to happen. He's got 11 goals and 27 points. He's got a minus six at 5-on-5. So it's 9-18 overall, which is really ugly. But if you'll get it 5-on-5, it's not that bad. Mike, would you trade Dylan Cousins? That's the question.
The initial reaction is no. I'm not trading Dylan Cousins. A lot of people want Dylan Cousins for the reasons you cited. The other reason they want Dylan Cousins is the feeling around the National Hockey League. Well, we're going to get him and we're going to fix him because the Buffalo Sabres have screwed him up like they screwed up all their other guys. Now, I think some of that went into Colorado's trade for Casey Mittelstadt for Bowen Byram. And I think you could safely say the Buffalo Sabres are getting the better half of that trade. Here's what I would say about Dylan Cousins. My initial reaction is no. He's not being shocked by the Sabres. I'm not trading him if I'm Kevin Adams. I'm taking every call if I'm Kevin Adams. And if somebody wants to talk about an experienced right-handed defenseman, not a third-pair guy, like a real dude, if somebody wants to have that talk and make another Mittelstadt for Byram hockey trade, we can be talking. And, you know, you cannot have basically anybody untouchable on this roster in the wake of this season, with the exception of Dahlin and probably Kulik. I would think anybody else, at least, you would talk about. So you have to talk about Dylan Cousins and see what's out there. If people really want a 23-year-old right-shot center who's big and who has some scoring potential and the workhorse from Whitehorse and the work ethic we've seen and the great Team Canada performances in the World Championships, make us an offer. If you're serious, make us an offer. You're not. If I'm Kevin Adams, I'm saying make us an offer. You're not robbing me blind here for this guy. You're going to make a legitimate hockey trade. So ultimately, my answer is no. I'm not trading Dylan Cousins. I got to get my socks knocked off. Somebody's got to really come in with a good offer. Otherwise, no. You're already a little thin at center. You know, you've moved Thompson to the wing. You've got a young guy in Kulik. You've got Ryan McLeod. You've traded Mittelstadt. So you got to be careful here if you trade Dylan Cousins. You have to be able to augment the center position as it is. So initially my response is no, but I'm listening.
I'm with you. It has to be the right trade offer, which I don't think is coming because of the lack of production. You're not going to sell low on a center with his skill set, age, contract. He has all the intangibles that you want on a playoff team. He works hard. He has the potential to be a good alternate captain. I think he was rushed into it a little too soon, especially where he's at in his career. And he's really, you've seen him at his best. It's not, I know that a lot of fans are skeptical and they say it's a one-off. He's not that good. The team has been a wreck ever since the end of the 22-23 season in one way or another, whether it's the bad starts, whether it's the power play being completely lost. If he's good, if the power play actually produces and Cousins is on it and he has what, 15 more points, and he's already got 42 points and you got 28 games left.
It's so frustrating to me because one of the big frustrations of the season is how good this team is at 5-on-5. They should be a playoff team with these kind of 5-on-5 numbers, but so many other things have conspired against them in this season, power play being one of them, that they haven't been able to take advantage of the 5-on-5 scoring they've been able to find this season. And you know, Cousins is one of those guys, like you say, the power play has suffered. He just hasn't produced. I need that 31-goal, 68-point guy I saw 2 years ago to reappear at $7.1 million and as my number two center. If he can't, that's a real issue. I'm still not ready to go yet to get rid of him. I mean, I might have to go one more season and then see, but it's just hard to fathom Dylan Cousins' career has gone. Was that really a one-time, one-off outlier season? It's hard to believe it could be.
Yeah, especially with the skill set. And just if you look at the entire player, and he's still not even – he gets pushed around. Like, he's not – he doesn't have man strength yet is the way that Lindy Ruff puts it. He doesn't, right? And I think you can't discount the learning curve for a lot of – basically almost everybody on this team. Transitioning
a long learning curve, Lance. It's a long learning curve. But
when you – going from the system that Don Granato had them run defensively, and you compare it to what Lindy is asking his guys to do, it was a steep learning curve. And
what system did Don Granato have running?
Well, that's a good question. So there wasn't a whole lot of structure, and Lindy Ruff does not have any patience for somebody who doesn't play with structure.
No.
Yet Dylan Cousins is career high ice time, 17.22 per game. He's doing some things that I think get overlooked because he's not scoring. So I'm with you, especially you mentioned it. Yes, they've got Noah Oslin and Consolenius. Last I checked, they don't have an NHL game played. Can't rely on those guys. Tage Thompson's injuries have forced him to the wing in each of the last three seasons, although this is the longest that we've seen him over on that spot. Ryan McLeod's not a first-line center. Nope. I like Ryan McLeod. He's better on the second or third line. And Kulik's still 20 years old. You can't be relying on – like, this team needs to get in the playoffs next year. Enough with the whole messing around and selling players out of frustration. Misidentifying the problem is one of the marquee reasons why this franchise is still trying to get back into the playoffs. Because how do we fix it? Oh, let's trade that guy. That guy's not the problem. Like, everything around that guy is the problem. It's interesting hearing Jack Eichel's comments in Montreal about, well, when I was in Buffalo, supporting cast, environment, losing culture. Coaching. He's still a young player. You can't give up on him. Last topic, Mike. The Sabres still have 28 games left to play. So sorry if that just made your head spin, considering that, there's still a lot of hockey left to go. This team is 22-27-5. Their next game is on the 22nd at home against the New York Rangers. What's left to play for the rest of the way?
All right, There's two things. It's very simple in my mind. What are you doing with Zucker, Greenway, and Tuck? You keeping them? You extending them? You trading them? That's the first thing to find out. I can't be subtracting from this team.
No,
I can't be subtracting veterans from this team. I need to figure out a way to keep these guys. I'm not trading for any more picks or prospects. So that to me is a huge story the remainder of the season. The second story to me for the remainder of the season is goaltending. Yeah. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has not been good enough at all for a guy who's got a 5-year deal at whatever it is, $5.1 million or whatever. He has not been good enough. He has been very hot and cold. He's been very good in games, very poor in games. A lot of the blown leads, and everybody talks about they're not doing this or not doing that. A lot of the blown leads have sat at the feet of UPL. The games against Colorado, not enough saves in either game against Colorado. What happens to Devin Levi? How deep a playoff run does he go with the Amerks? How many more shots does he get in Buffalo on a little spot start? Does he get any more? And then what decision at the end of the season how do you look at the goaltending? How do you look at Luukkonen? How do you look at Levi? That, to me, is one of the biggest stories to watch here in these last 28 games. I paid Luukkonen 5 years and $5 million. He can't have a save percentage that starts with an eight. He just can't. You know,
how do you look at, how do you look at your goalie coach?
How do you look at your goalie coach when Devon Levi looks like the top prospect in hockey with the Rochester Amherst and looks like a nervous flopper when he gets with the Buffalo Sabres? I think we're looking at a lot of coaching situations. What does Lindy Ruff, and this isn't really for the last 28 games, but it'll impact it. What does Lindy Ruff do with this staff next year? What does he do with Mike Bales, the goalie coach? What does he do with Marty Wilford, defense coach, who's very popular, but team hasn't been great defensively, hasn't been great on the penalty kill? What does he do with Seth Appert, who was a first-time NHL assistant coach who hasn't had a great power play for long stretches? So I think the coaching question is going to be a big one as we get toward the end of the season. And right now, Mike Bales, to me, is certainly in the crosshairs. The way Luukkonen has played, he cannot be at the level he's at. I like Luukkonen in a lot of games. Here it is, Lance. Luukkonen, to me, I love his game some nights, and I hate it. And that's the problem. I need to just like his game every night. And I just can't, because you either have to love it or hate it, because he's so wildly inconsistent at times. He's so good some nights, and other nights he's just not, and I need better.
Reverting back to some really bad habits, he goes swimming out of his crease too often again. And that's what he was doing before the second half of last season. So he's back in that mode where he's scrambling.
And he had gotten rid of that.
Yeah, he had. You know? And that's why I mentioned coaching. And you go back to Linus Allmark and his success elsewhere. You got Luukkonen now with just riding this roller coaster, because we know he's shown it. He's capable. But
he's good.
He's losing it, right? Like, he can be good some nights, but that's why it just goes back to coaching for me.
I keep looking up some of these games. I keep looking up, like, he's going to give up four again. He's at three. We're in the second period, you know, and at the end of the night, he's given up four or five or six, and you're like, you can't do it. It doesn't work that
stuff.
Way.
It's technique stuff, too, just breakdowns in technique, dropping when he doesn't need to. That's the frustrating part from the outside. When you're watching any goaltender in the league, it's like, why are you 6'5"? Why are you dropping down in that situation?
You've heard me yell that in the press box a few times. Why are you on your knees? Stand up.
And rightfully so. For me, Mike, what's left to play for is making sure that every young player on this roster that's going to be part of this team's future takes that step forward. Is Jack Quinn going to rediscover what we saw in glimmers last season? Is Owen Power going to really clean up his game in the defensive zone to the point where he saves Marty Wilford's job? Because right now, Mike, I look at Power and what he's doing in the D zone, and that enough is a reason to make a change with your defensive assistant coach. Yeah. And you look at Zach Benson, that's another one where, to me, like, this is kind of going off on a little bit of a tangent, but when you're looking at Kevin Adams and some of the bigger mistakes that he made, two for me are just rushing. It's rushing Zach Benson to the NHL, because now where you put him in the lineup, Lindy Ruff had to put him on the fourth line because you don't want to give him too many minutes. He's still five. He competes. He's always in battles. He works his tail off. But when you're 5'10", 165 or 170 pounds, there's only so much you could do out there. Yeah. You can't send him to Rochester, so they painted themselves in the corner with Zach Benson, so they really need for him to continue to make progress and show that he's not just surviving in the NHL, he's continuing to develop his game. And Kulik is another one, right? I mean, we talked about center. I skeptical a Cousins trade happens, especially before the deadline. How does Kulik play the rest of the season? He had a rough night in Nashville, out of position defensively on one shift. The entire line was terrible. But
the whole line, yeah.
Really bad. So can he continue to show that he could play center in the National Hockey League? And how does that impact your roster building strategy? Not just in terms of Cousins, but Peyton Krebs. Peyton Krebs has been really good defensively, but he's still doing nothing in the offensive zone other than some pretty passes every once in a while, right? Not shooting the puck, not creating. No. So how does that really play into what your plan is going to be down the middle? So for me, it's not only, you know, they can't afford to just go into the tank and then finish last in the league, because then the entire coaching staff, including Lindy, might be in the crosshairs. But you need to have these guys be in a good place at season's end and really be able to reflect. And this is the second half of the season wasn't just a big waste.
No, I agree. They've been trending better lately since the 13-game winning streak ended. A lot of them have. But, you know, it's just hard to believe they're just out of it and they're in last place. And it is very hard to believe, but they just could not stop the bleeding in December. And that's going to be their undoing in February, March, and April.
And the power play is one of the bigger mysteries, because it's been bad for, 2 years, and a couple of months at this point. Yeah. It had a hot start in the 22-23 season when they were just passing over to Tage and he was shooting one timers and beating every goalie. But ever since, it's been terrible.
And they had a couple hot stretches this year, but they don't consistently stay with it.
Yeah, three different coaches have run that power play during that span. Matt Ellis, Don Granato, now Seth Appert. We'll see what that all means going forward. But, Mike, yeah, Four Nations, there's still a lot of hockey left to be played in that tournament. I'm sure that we'll talk about some more of that next week. The tournament finale is next Thursday, so we might record after that so we can do a little bit of a recap.
There'll be a lot of good topics to talk about in the wake of that final game.
And Lindy Ruff is holding four practices before their first game next week. So we'll be able to tell everybody about Lindy's training camp 2.0, because it's going to be hilarious what he makes those guys do. They're going to be they're going to get bag skated on Tuesday. So that'll be fun. He's Mike Harrington. I'm Lance Lysowski. Thank you for joining us as always. And we will talk to you guys again soon. Thank you.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at expresswindowsinc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.